Talking Birds.
Made possible by the generous support of the Birdwatchers General Store, Route 6A, Orleans, Cape Cod. On the web at birdwatchersgeneralstore.com. By the Boston Harbor Island Alliance. Minutes away, worlds apart. Go to bostonharborislands.org for more information.
Good morning. Welcome to our show, number 536. Thought we'd start off this morning with a little experiment in the lab here. A while back, we learned about the theory that part of a Beethoven symphony was directly inspired by the song of a European bird called the Chetty's Warbler. Well, we did a little demo of that theory on NPR's Weekend Edition a few weeks ago, and Johanna Vienneau from up in the Portland, Maine area was listening, and she submitted her own theory about birds' influence on music. "I am curious," she wrote, "if you think one part of Leonard Bernstein's Candide might have been inspired by the song of the brown creeper." She said she heard the piece performed by the Portland Symphony and that she was, quote, "electrified to hear one short passage that was, for me, the creeper's song," end quote. Well, Johanna sent us a recording of the piece and pointed out the part that she feels matches the brown creeper's song. So we've put it together here. First, we'll hear the brown creeper and then the music and then the two together to see if they match. Here's the brown creeper. Kind of a musical pattern there. Is it the musical pattern of the Candide overture? That would be the question there. Well, here's a bit of Candide. This is the part Johanna referred to. Part of Leonard Bernstein's Candide Overture. Now here are Candide and Creeper together. Now we're getting a lot of smiling and nodding here in the studio. We're seeing a connection there, as Johanna did. Who would have thought that? What do you think, Talking Birds listeners? Did Leonard draw inspiration from a bird, as Ludwig may have done? Of course, both Beethoven and Bernstein are gone, so I guess we will only be able to speculate. Meanwhile, here we go back up to the third floor to the Talking Birds swag department, as we search for the perfect eco-friendly item with the Talking Birds logo emblazoned thereon that we will offer to Talking Birds listeners. We've gotten some great suggestions from tote bags and hats and mustard-colored long-sleeve T-shirts to water bottles, magnets, keychains, and window stickers. We're looking for a few more suggestions. We're trying to find something really eco-friendly that would still be kind of cool. And if you have an idea, please let us know. Send an email to Ray at talkingbirds.com. Never a G in Talking, or contact us via Facebook or Twitter at Talking Birds.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Hey, this week on Facebook, we're finally featuring the fabulous photo finalists in our Talking Birds photo contest. In fact, we're posting new photos every day, and we'll continue doing so until we get to our grand prize winner sometime next week. Some great pictures there. Sent in by Talking Birds listeners, so do check them out. They are pretty spectacular. Well, we're also very international on today's show, thanks to our young superstar birder from Canada, Charlotte Wasilik, who will tell us about problems facing birds in Australia. That and more right now on our Charlotte's weblog.
Alberta.
Good
morning, Charlotte. What's cooking?
Good morning, Ray. I'm back from the busiest part of my spring and summer and can't wait to get into the regular rhythm of my segments. Fall shorebird migration has started, and the tree swallows that nested in our yard this spring and summer have left with their fledged young. The barn swallows, however, are still here and sitting on their second clutches of eggs. Earlier this month, the Australian State of the Birds was released. The State of the Birds is a result of more than 900,000 surveys taken by birders across Australia since 1998. The study found that many common species, like the kookaburra, wagtail, and magpie, are all in decline, with habitat loss, feral cats, and foxes playing a large role in the species' dropping numbers. If you would like to read the full report, visit birdlife.org.au/stateofbirds. This week on my blog, I have an interview with young British birder Maya Rose Craig. Maya Rose has traveled all over the world with her family and has more than 3,000 species on her life list. In the interview, she talks about the adventures and challenges of being a young birder. You can find the full interview on my website at prairiebirder.wordpress.com. That's all for this week, Ray. I'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Charlotte. Hey, be sure to check out Charlotte's blog online, prairiebirder.wordpress.com. Young birders in your family, neighborhood, circle of friends, let us know. Maybe you're a young birder. We'd like to hear from you. Get in touch with us here at Talkin' Birds. Well, birds are under threat everywhere, not just in Australia. And still to come on our show today, we'll talk to National Audubon's Tom Auer, who'll tell us what Audubon says is now the number one threat to the survival of birds. You may be surprised to learn what that threat is. Also on this morning's show, Mike O'Connor from Cape Cod's famous Birdwatchers General Store will help a city dweller attract some wild birds in our Let's Ask Mike segment. Plus, we'll give away another fabulous feeder from Droll Yankees in our Mystery Bird Contest. And up next, a couple of Corvid cartoon characters will help us bring back today's Talking Birds featured feathered friend.
Tally-ho, and away we go!
Oh, that's smarts. There they go, Heckle and Jekyll, those famous cartoon magpies. Ah, but it's a real bird in which we're interested today. Our featured feathered friend is the black-billed magpie. We have a couple of Talkin' Birds contributors to thank for our choice this week. Jeff B. from Delano, Minnesota, and Margaret Gilbert from just east of Anchorage, Alaska, who asked us by email to include some Western birds on our show. Well, Heckle and Jekyll were pretty smart birds, which makes sense since the black-billed magpie is a member of the very intelligent Corvid family, which also includes jays and crows and ravens. The black-billed magpie is a large bird, about 18 inches long, and very striking, with its black bill, head, breast, back, and rump, sharply contrasting with a white belly and a long iridescent tail, a black tail. Its wings are iridescent, too, with big white patches. And despite what you remember in the Heckle and Jekyll cartoons, the black-billed magpie actually sounds kind of like this. The black-billed magpie, Pika Hudsonia. Today's Talkin' Birds featured feathered friend.
See you next week in a brand new show.
Thanks again for being with us here. It's our show, number 536. Hope you'll visit our sparkling new website, talkinbirds.com. And by all means, check out our Facebook page and see all those great photos by listeners in our photo contest and lots of other stuff. And we hope you follow us there and at Twitter and Instagram at Talkin' Birds. So what is the greatest threat birds face today? Is it wind turbines? Is it window crashes? Is it pollution? Is it outdoor cats? Well, all of the above represent great threats to birds, but according to National Audubon scientists, the greatest threat our birds face today is climate change. which the evidence clearly suggests is already well underway. And why are global warming, which leads to climate change, such a threat to birds? Well, we'll find out as we welcome the National Audubon Conservation Data Specialist, Tom Auer, to Talkin' Birds. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Ray.
Great to have you with us this morning, Tom. Your colleague, Audubon Chief Scientist Barry Langham, is among those making that statement about climate change's enormous effect on birds. What is happening with that, Tom, and why is it so?
Right. Well, we undertook a study to look at the potential future ranges or distributions of 588 species in North America. And our study found that more than half of those 314 species are threatened by climate change due to having their ranges shrink or shift by the end of the century. And any time that a bird has to shift its range, that represents a stress to the species. And obviously a shrinking or contracting range is a chance that we may lose a species. And so this was our finding, and it was very surprising and really led us to say that climate change is the biggest threat right now to birds, and it's fast by the end of the century.
Mm-hmm. How did this number of species end up being studied, this 588? How was that determined?
That was determined based on available data from the Breeding Bird Survey and the Christmas Bird Count. So we took data from both of those sets. For the winter, we used the Christmas Bird Count, and for the summer, we used the Breeding Bird Survey data, and we used that list of species based on whether we had enough data from those data sets to make statistically sound statements about those species.
Okay, so this is enough of, a database on which to make some projections.
Yes, correct. We had a long enough record and enough data over the scale of North America to make statements about those species.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to understand, Tom, about the idea of birds shifting their ranges as a result of climate change. Some birds apparently able to do this more than others can. But what can you tell us about why specifically they do it? And is that the major problem of doing it, and that these birds, or is the major problem, is that they might simply not find the kind of habitat and food sources they need to survive when they make those shifts?
Right. So some species are more adaptable than others as it comes to climate. And so some of them may be able to make these shifts without much problem. And some species are kind of adapted to do that already. For example, Dick Sissel does this kind of based on drought across different years. And so maybe Dick Sissel can adapt more readily. But other species that are very tightly tied to a particular climate that determines what other species that they need are around, so say it's a tree species or an insect species or some suite of species that they require, if that climate shifts dramatically and really quickly, you know, climate change is happening at a rate in the recent years that we haven't seen on the planet in a long time, it may force these birds to move faster than they can adapt, and then when they do move, they may not find what they need there. So, for example, if you think of a cerulean warbler, for example, they require really mature, tall hardwood forests that are maybe 80, 100 years old. And if the bird is forecast, based on climate, to end up in Canada, where there aren't those species available, then that bird could be in trouble.
Well, what would cause specifically, let's say the cerulean warbler, in association with climate change, what would cause it to make that northward move?
Sure. So if the temperature or precipitation patterns change such that a food source that they need can no longer succeed, say maybe that an insect species isn't able to hatch under precipitation or temperature conditions, then they're going to have to move to look for food. Or, for example, if there's a drought and some plant species that they need dies off, then they're going to have to move to find a replacement for that.
Mm-hmm.
So these dramatic changes in temperature and precipitation that are forecast by the end of the century are what are going to propel species to move in response.
Is there a sense of what species or groups of birds are most affected, and will that change as the effects of climate change intensify?
Yeah, that's possible. You know, one of the groups that we found as being what we called climate endangered, a lot of species in the group were grassland species from the north central United States. So we're talking about species like burrowing owl, long-billed curlew, chestnut-colored longspur. That group of birds was forecast to have a lot of contractions within their ranges by the end of the century. And so the dynamics associated with climate and grasslands seem to indicate that those species may be at more risk than others.
Hmm. Oh, you haven't been able to collect sufficient data, Tom, to indicate the effect of North American birds in their winter ranges. But is it reasonable to conclude then that there are more birds under threat than you've been able to identify?
That's possible. There could be more species that are under this risk, but we are working on that. Audubon is continuing to revise the predictions that we've made. We're trying to pull in the latest climate science. We're trying to use the most up-to-date technology in terms of scientific modeling to make these predictions. So keep an eye on us for updates in the next few years on specific species and what risk climate change poses, because we'll be keeping that science up to date. This isn't a one-time effort. This is an ongoing process to make sure that we understand what risk climate change poses to all of our bird species.
And speaking of collecting data and the science, much of what you've collected has come from regular folks, I guess what we call citizen scientists now. And what more can regular folks do, to contribute beyond bringing data to bear?
Absolutely. It's important that we continue to monitor these birds. We don't want to tail off on that. We need continued collection of the data. But beyond that, there are a lot of things that you can do even in your own backyard. This study really shows that we need to up the amount of habitat that we make available for birds. We need birds to be strong in their current population so that they can maybe more easily weather the changes the climate brings. And so things, for example, like planting native species in your backyard. We've seen a number of studies recently that have shown that native species produce a lot more insects that are beneficial to birds, native bird species. And so replacing ornamental species in your backyard with native species is a really important thing that everyone can do in their own yard. And then reducing other threats that birds may face, either be it from cats or maybe from windows in residential homes, mm-hmm. but making sure that you're giving birds a safe place in your own backyard, because that's something that you have control over and something that you can act on today.
Tom, just quickly wanted to call attention to the special issue of Audubon Magazine from this past fall, a report entitled 314 Bird Species on the Brink, including the golden eagle. And it's really something. I've gotten some copies to distribute, but that can be read online too. Am I right?
Yeah, please check out climate.audubon.org. We have profiles for all of those 314 species, and we have animated maps and descriptions about the threat that the birds face due to climate change. I encourage everybody to go in, take a look at those, maybe find a bird that's in your backyard that might be threatened, learn more about it. And you can also read parts of our study to learn more about what we've done to understand the threat that climate change poses.
Tom Auer is a conservation data specialist with National Audubon. Tom, thank you so much for your great work, and thanks for being on with us this morning.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ray.
Coming up next here on Talkin' Birds, it's our mystery bird contest in just 1 minute.
Here's an idea for the next time you're shopping for wild bird food. Look for the Audubon Park brand, a top choice among bird lovers for more than 40 years. That's because Audubon Park wild bird seed is the finest kind, with more than a dozen selections to choose from, including the popular fruit and nut, songbird and cardinal, and no-waste patio blends. Human development and climate change are having increasing impacts on wild birds. Feeding the hummers, chickadees, goldfinches, cardinals, and all the beautiful and fascinating birds in your backyard really helps them survive and thrive. All of Audubon Park's products meet the highest quality standards in the industry and have earned early compliance with the FDA's Food Safety Modernization Act. And Audubon Park products are easy to find at your supermarket, lawn and garden store, farm and feed market, and online retailers. For more information, visit AudubonPark.com. That's AudubonPark.com. Audubon Park wild bird food is made right here in the USA. Get some for your backyard birds today. Audubon Park wild bird food.
Talkin' Birds is made possible in part by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, a world leader in the study, appreciation, and conservation of birds. Please check them out at birds.cornell.edu. You're eligible to be a winner here on Talkin' Birds if you haven't been a winner in the past 6 months. And if you're not hearing our show live, by the way, you can hear our show live and you can participate in our Mystery Bird Contest no matter where you are. Just go to talkinbirds.com. To see how to do it, it's very easy. Our Mystery Bird Contest phone number is 781-837-4900. We urge you, we implore you to call early in the process here so we don't run out of time and get your call through on our contest, in which today we're giving away the fabulous Droll Yankees New Generation 15-inch sunflower mixed seed feeder. Clean contemporary lines make this tube feeder an attractive addition to your yard or garden, and it has all the great Droll Yankees attributes that make it such a great feeder, the best on the planet. And that is really true. 781-837-4900 is the number. Here's the sound of our mystery bird. Our mystery bird is a small songbird with a gray crown, a yellow chest and throat, a black necklace, and black stripes down the sides, white wing bars that look like a large white patch on the wings, a yellow rump, and a black-tipped tail with a large white patch on it. Our bird, which winters in the tropics, breeds from central Canada south to Virginia. It feeds mostly on insects gleaned from the undersides of leaves and bark crevices. Tell us what it is or take a guess, because no correct answer means the drawing will determine the winner. So it's worth taking a guess at it, because sometimes a not exactly correct guess, is a winner. 781-837-4900 is the number. Meanwhile, we're going to check in with Mike O'Connor on beautiful Cape Cod at the Birdwatchers General Store. Let's ask Mike in just 1 minute. Right in Boston's backyard lies a magnificent resource where you can walk a Civil War era fort, explore tide pools, and camp under the stars. Once known as the city's hidden gem, the Boston Harbor Islands National Park area has become the go-to urban escape for tourists and residents alike. It's a marvelous destination for birders, offering a huge variety of migrating and nesting species that can be viewed independently or during free ranger-guided bird walks on Saturday mornings. The islands are home to other wildlife, too, including deer, fox, coyote, rabbits, raccoons, muskrats, squirrels, and harbor seals. There are countless activities for non-birders as well, like hiking on miles of trails, sunny beaches, ocean fishing, concerts, beer tastings, and programs for the whole family. 34 islands, 3,000 acres, endless fun and exploration, all minutes from Boston. Find out more at bostonharborislands.org. Okay, the next part of our show is what we call Let's Ask Mike. You've heard this before if you've listened to the show before, because Mike has been with us for a long time from the Birdwatchers General Store. Good morning, Mike.
Morning, Rick.
Here's one that says, I live in a brick apartment building in Boston. We have a brick front porch. Alongside the porch is a tangle of vines, which seems to attract a lot of birds. We're thinking of putting a bird feeder near the vines to feed our visitors. This would require more human activity in this area. Is it unwise to place a bird feeder too close to a building or too near to human activity? Will the birds be too afraid to use the feeders? I would just remind the birds that we're just as afraid of them as they are of us.
Don't say that. I know people that are.
Yeah.
My Irish ancestors, the birds of bad luck.
Oh, yeah, right.
Oh, my God.
Bad omens, yeah. So what about this?
No, the birds are fine. The birds, especially in a city, they adapt to whatever's available. And if these are city birds, they're going to be in tune to people, so that's not going to bother them. So then they won't, if you put a feeder out, they'll come and eat. And then if you, walk past that spot, they might fly up to a roof line or to a distant tree or something like that. But they'll come right back. I mean, you could, we walk through Boston Common and, there's the birds that readily get used to people. And there's a lot of people. I used to have a customer who lived on Roosevelt Island in New York. It's part of Manhattan. And she lived on some crazy 34th floor or something like that. And she would put window feeders, stick them right on the glass, and the birds would fly up there. And, there's more brick than any place in the world, I think, in Manhattan. And they would come up there to eat. So the birds adapt to that area. If you frighten them for a second, they're going to be fine. They'll just give you some space and come right back. So I think it would be kind of, brighten up the neighborhood. I think it would be kind of fun to do that. I recommend it, sure. I'd say maybe use some sunflower seeds without the shells if you can afford it. It's kind of expensive, but you won't get a mess. A lot of times people, they complain in a tight area. They go, look at the shells on the ground. But if you can get sunflower seeds without the shells, that would eliminate that problem too. So I say go for it.
Mike, thank you. We'll talk to you next Sunday.
Awesome.
Talk to you then.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Question for Mike, send it in. ray@talkingbirds.com is the address. We'll send you a signed copy of Mike's remarkable book, Why Do Bluebirds Hate Me? Just send your question in. We'll get it answered by Mike as only he can. Back to the Mystery Bird Contest, trying to identify this mystery bird. A small songbird with a gray crown, a yellow chest and throat, a black necklace and black stripes down the sides. White wing bars that look like a large white patch on the wings, a yellow rump, and a black-tipped tail with a large white patch on it. Our bird, which winters in the tropics, breeds from central Canada south to Virginia. It feeds mostly on insects gleaned from the undersides of leaves and in bark crevices. What is it? 781-837-4900. Alan is with us from Brookline, Massachusetts. Good morning, Alan.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. I'll take a guess and say a hummingbird.
A hummingbird. Tim? Oh, that was the mean Tim buzzer there saying it's not a hummingbird of any sort. But thank you, Alan. Hey, by the way, very soon we're going to have our friend Cy Montgomery on the show. She knows a lot about hummingbirds, and she recently wrote a fascinating piece about it, about hummingbirds. So we're going to have her on the show again in the near future. She's a delightful guest, and we'll be looking forward to having her again. Back at the Mystery Bird, Joe is in Plymouth, Massachusetts. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Ray.
How are you? You sound terrific.
Wonderful. Wonderful day in the neighborhood.
It is. It is a beautiful day, 2nd of August. What do you think, Joe, on the mystery bird?
Yellow rumped warbler.
Yellow rump warbler. Tim. Oh, boy, he is mean. No, it's a top quality guess, Joe, but not exactly correct.
Thank you so much, Ray. Love the show.
Thank you, Joe. 781-837-4900 is the number to call. Not a yellow-rumped warbler, but we're getting warm. We have Edward in Saugus, Massachusetts. Good morning, Edward.
Ray, a pleasure to talk to you. I enjoy the show.
Thank you, there. Thank you, Edward. What do you think on the mystery? What do you think?
I guess it's a chickadee.
A chickadee. Tim, that buzzer is going to get worn out here if we're not careful. Not a chickadee, but thank you, Edward. Try us again.
Thank you.
All right. What is our mystery bird? It's not a hummingbird of any kind. It's not a chickadee. It's not a yellow-rumped warbler, even though it does have a little yellow rump there going on, but it has a lot of other stuff, you know, like that that little necklace and those black stripings on the side. That's kind of a pretty strong clue. Let's see how Sheila in Rockland, Mass. Does here. Good morning, Sheila.
Morning, Ray. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
What do you say,
My
Sheila?
My guess is a Western Meadowlark.
Western Meadowlark. What do you say on that one there, Tim? Yeah, kind of the same response there. Thank you, Sheila.
Okay, thank you.
All
Have
right.
a great day.
All right, thank you. You too. Donald is in Abington, Massachusetts. Good morning, Donald.
Good morning, Ray.
Good morning. We've got a lot of almost correct answers here. Donald, can you help us out?
I'm going to try, Ray. I'm going to guess it's a flycatcher.
A flycatcher, Tim. Whoa, not a flycatcher. Thank you, Donald.
Thank you, Ray.
All right. Thanks for the call. Boy, we're buzzing through some calls here that we got one very close, as we indicated a couple of minutes ago, but haven't quite made it. I don't know if we can get another call through before we run out of time, which is going to happen in just a couple of minutes. In the meantime, next week we'll be celebrating the release of a new book about a legendary birding destination. It's one that's right here in Massachusetts. So, you know, all of our calls have been from Massachusetts today in anticipation of that. But I don't know, Tim, can we squeeze one more call in here? We'll see. Time is almost up. We have Mark is writing down one more thing there. We're going to try to squeeze this in if we can do it quickly enough. And if not, we'll say thank you, executive producer of Talking Birds, Mark Duffield. Associate producer is Debbie Bleacher. Our engineer is Tim McKinney. I'm Ray Brown. And we've just decided that, I'm not sure what's going on there. It says, I guess our show is over. Thanks a lot. Ed in Saugus, you are the winner of the bird, the Magnolia Warbler. The Magnolia Warbler.
Generous support of the Birdwatchers General Store, Route 6A, Orleans, Cape Cod. On the web at birdwatchersgeneralstore.com. By the Boston Harbor Island Alliance. Minutes away. Worlds apart. Go to bostonharborislands.org for more information.
I love Talking Birds. I love that show.